For several weeks, there have been protests in Haiti over corruption, power blackouts, government mismanagement generally. The demands came to a head this week with the prime minister losing his job after a no-confidence vote in parliament. This dysfunction sadly has become, for many, the stereotype of Haiti. What we want to get at right now is why. For an answer to that, it helps to look at Haiti's history. That's something Aaron Richterman has been thinking about for a long time. He's a doctor here in Boston who's worked extensively in Haiti for years with Partners in Health. Aaron, you spend your time between Boston and Haiti. I imagine you see headlines in U.S. media and you get to Haiti and you see perhaps a different reality on the ground. So where is your head at when you get down there? Like, you get off the plane, you go to the hospital. What are you thinking?
Well, you know, as I get there, I'm spending my time in rural Haiti working in a clinic there in a town called Anche. And so I'm heading to a place where, you know, there's a clinic staffed entirely by Haitian healthcare providers taking care of patients with HIV, tuberculosis, and cholera. And, you know, hunger is the number one complaint that I see in clinic there. And it often gets directly in the way of being able for them to take their medications and receive their medical care. You know, I think when I return from Haiti and hearing the questions from people here, which is frequently, you know, things like what's happening in Haiti, what's going on there, and there's always this kind of implicit assumption that not only are things bad in Haiti, but that, you know, this is just the way things are there, the natural state of affairs there.
How do you see these ongoing protests?
Yeah, well, I think it's first important to consider what I think is really the fundamental issue in Haiti, which is that people cannot rely on public infrastructures to supply and support what are the foundational components of a functioning society. You know, things like education, roads, jobs, security, or healthcare, as I work in. And it's essential to realize how this state of affairs came to be. And this is, you know, how I see it. And that first and foremost, the country that we call Haiti was originally conceptualized, you know, 300 years ago as a slave colony powered by kidnapped people from Africa. And the original idea of Haiti was not as a functioning society with schools and hospitals and other pieces of public infrastructure, but instead as essentially a giant plantation, you know, specifically designed to enrich France. And thus, as a direct result of this, you know, when Haiti won its independence, none of this infrastructure was there to begin with. And so you might think, why do these events 200 years ago even matter now? Well, the reality is that since that time, there have been, you know, multitudes of policies, many of them explicitly racist, which have continued to propagate this original historical injustice into the present time. You know, you have France in the 1800s refusing to recognize Haiti's sovereignty until Haiti began paying the equivalent of $21.7 billion over the course of 122 years in restitution for lost property. You have the U.S. invading Haiti in the 20th century, occupying them for 20 years as a result of the debt that Haiti incurred to pay France. And then over the last few decades, you have the view, which in my opinion is justified in many cases, that the U.S. and other powers have continued to tip the scales in Haiti's democratic processes in favor of candidates aligned with the U.S. interest. So this is the lens through which I think my patients see the current protests, which is that, you know, all of these historical events and many more have contributed to the propagation of this fundamental problem.
Connect that history then and the whole current state of affairs to medicine in Haiti right now.
So I think the most dramatic example of this collision of remote and recent history is the cholera epidemic, you know, which in Haiti has resulted in nearly a million cases of cholera and over 10,000 deaths since 2010, both of which are, by the way, probably vast underestimations. And the first question we have to ask is, why is Haiti vulnerable to cholera in the first place? And again, this comes back to the fact that cholera is a waterborne illness that can be basically eliminated with comprehensive water and sanitation infrastructure. And so the answer returns to this lack of public infrastructure to provide clean drinking water. Think about it this way. The average Haitian household is spending 15% of its income purchasing safe drinking water. Second, you can ask directly, why is cholera in Haiti? Well, as we know now, cholera did not exist in Haiti before 2010 and was accidentally introduced into the water supply by UN peacekeepers who were asymptomatic carriers of the disease. Cholera was literally brought to Haiti by the international community. And although the UN has admitted responsibility, there's, you know, a pitiful amount of money that has become available to address this problem. And finally, you know, we have to ask the question, why is cholera continuing to propagate in Haiti? What is continuing to drive, you know, these cases, these deaths? Cholera and food insecurity are closely related. You know, people who are hungry behave very differently than people who are not hungry. And the people who are hungry may be at higher risk of drinking unsafe water or eating unsafe food. And this relationship is important in this specific context because Haiti is one of the most food insecure places in the world. So then, you know, we have to go back to history. Why is Haiti food insecure? You know, you have U.S.-driven changes to the Haitian economy in the mid-20th century to move away from agriculture and towards a manufacturing economy, in part to, you know, by the desire for cheap labor for American firms. And then more recently, you have, you know, the forced tariff reductions of the 1990s, which flooded the Haitian market with American-grown rice subsidized by the U.S. government, and in many cases permanently putting Haitian farmers out of business. You know, when Haitian doctors are working at trying to treat the cholera patients in front of them and treat the annual cases that are coming in with the rainy season, you know, this is the context through which all of this must be seen.
I mean, you mentioned players like France and the U.S., some officials from the U.N. Is it up to them to address these issues and come up with solutions that work?
We'll start with France. You know, I think that the impact of that direct payment to France over the course of 122 years, it's immeasurable in restitution for lost property, which was basically the bodies of the Haitians themselves. And so in my mind, I think there's no question with regard to France that there should be some sort of reparation in response to that. And with the U.S., I mean, the U.S. and Haiti, their fates have been inextricably linked since the birth of both of the countries. And so I think, you know, the role of the U.S. is one to, you know, to acknowledge sort of the ways that we have undermined Haiti throughout history, but also then to serve as a good neighbor, as a support to let Haiti, you know, develop in Haitian hands and with Haitian self-determination.
Dr. Aaron Richterman, thanks very much for being with us. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. Richterman divides his time between Boston and rural Haiti, where he works closely with Partners in Health.